Welcome to the 126th edition of the Gooner Podcast. This is your host, David Udo, and we are recording on the Monday evening after Arsenal's 4-1 victory over Sunderland and ahead of next weekend's visit to Stoke City. So, as traditional, the panel introductions. And for the regulars this month, we will keep it brief. So, first up, it's hello to the man behind the spy column in the printed issue of the Gooner, Mr. Steve Ashford.
Hello, everybody.
Next up, here for the fourth consecutive month in a row, but not a victim of any rotation policy at Gooner Towers, Basti to his friends, it's good evening to the irrepressible Mustafa Goldstein.
Hello, and I wish you a lot of mental strength.
And last but not least, a first-time guest who warrants a proper introduction. Cough, get this proper. A founder member of Red Action. He received a short-term ban from home matches for displaying a banner describing Samir Nasri as a little whore in French. On the first occasion, the former Gunner returned to Arsenal after his move to Manchester City. However, relationships have improved with the club to the extent that Arsenal worked with Red Action's idea to stage the card display that welcomed the team for last week's match against Bayern Munich, which proved a great success. So, here to talk about that and more, it's a very warm Gooner Podcast welcome to Mr. Raymond Herlihy.
Hello, thanks for having me on, and I still stand by my Nasri comments.
I can't think anything but sheer correctness when I think of that, but we'll come back to that later. At the moment, let's talk about the Champions League itself. And firstly, Raymond, give us some background behind the card display and the challenge of getting enough fans in their seats before the teams came out to see it.
Well, the club basically gave us the thumbs up a couple of months ago, so from then it was just absolutely hammering social media and all the Arsenal contacts we could think of to promote as much as possible. Arsenal fans changing their match night routine and getting in the ground 10 minutes earlier than normal, so trying to get people to leave work a little bit earlier, one less drink in the pub, an earlier train, something like that, just to get people in their seats. And we think it had some good success, so thanks everybody who helped us promote that.
I don't know about you, I mean, I was really looking forward to it, and I made sure that I was in there by about 20 past 7 because I've got a weird superstition thing about watching goalkeepers warm up. But anyway, I was there, but going into the ground, I was panicking that people were going to be coming in 5 minutes after kick-off, that kind of thing. Was part of you worried that people were going to be complete gits?
I was extremely worried. Extremely worried. I was watching the ground filling up slowly from about 7:20, 7:25. But I think it helped that the teams, I think, were a couple of minutes late coming out, which really helped, and then just all of a sudden, especially in the lower tier, there was a big rush just from about seven, just after half seven, and between 7:40 there was a big rush and a lot of people got in their spaces. So it actually happened a couple of minutes earlier. People were so excited and so enthusiastic to hold their cards in the air. It actually started a bit earlier than normal and it went really, really well, and the feedback has been great since.
I think it's very, very well deserved. I mean, I've obviously been a season ticket holder for God knows how long, but I mean, when we moved to the ground, I mean, there wasn't much of an atmosphere at all, and I can think off the top of my head the very, very few occasions there was a huge atmosphere and everyone getting behind the team. And for the opening, well, up until the Chesney incident when he left, every time we got the ball, all 57,000 Arsenal fans were urging them forward, and at one point I actually saw Mesut Ozil run. I don't see that very often. It was great. Ed, look, talking about the game itself, starting on my left, Basti, Mr. Goldstein, do you think there was enough in the period when it was 11 versus 11 to make you think Arsenal can overturn the 2-0 deficit in Germany? Shaking his head before I finish the question.
To say definitely. It was one of those head shakes that says definitely.
Okay.
I thought we looked great at the beginning. I thought until the penalty, we were looking pretty good, and I thought, you know, they were having a little bit of, you know, obviously they're Bayern Munich, so they're going to have a bit of the ball, aren't they? But I thought we looked really. I thought we were going to have them. I thought this was our day, and we're going to beat them. We looked confident. We were attacking. We were making opportunities, and then, you know, get a penalty. And when Ozil stood up to take it, I just thought, he's the one who was fouled. And I remember there used to be a thing of, like,
you know, Henri had that thing.
Yeah. And I just had a feeling, oh, okay. But then I thought, of course, you know, okay, please. I don't have to tell anyone what the penalty was like. I mean, it was as though he was trying to work out what Neuer was thinking. But for listeners who are worried about this noise in the background, it's the rain on our little roof.
For the avoidance of doubt, we're not in Abbey Road Studios as we used to be for the Gooner podcast.
And we do have a roof.
We have a corrugated iron roof with rain pouring down on it. It's a bit like the North Bank. We're actually in the old North Bank.
That's just a very good point, actually.
Not
yeah.
far away, actually, listeners.
Oh. Stephen, what were your thoughts about the game? I mean, let's face it, Bayern Munich have made a Scottish Premier League of the Bundesliga. I think they've already won it. I think this afternoon Jurgen Klopp's given up on behalf of Borussia Dortmund, and Arsenal, who dropped their only centre forward to play the missing Yaya Sanogo. Yaya, it's glad to see you are alive. We have been worrying about you for the last 6 months. But I mean, until the penalty, were you thinking, bloody hell, I don't know who this Arsenal is, but they could beat anyone?
Oh, absolutely. Even before the game, I was really, really up for it before the game. I was thinking, we're going to do this. Mm. And as you say about the Scottish League with Celtic being so far ahead, I mean, I actually phoned up a mate and said, we're playing the German Celtic tonight. When they play a real team that plays Man United, Chelsea, Man City, Liverpool, Tottenham, Everton every week, unlike German, mid-table teams and stuff.
Yeah, sure.
I thought, we're going to give them a game. They're going to find out what it's like to play a real team. And for the first 15 minutes, that was the case. I think it all went wrong when Ozil missed the penalty. And when he shaped up to take it, I thought, why Ozil?
Yeah.
I'm me and 57,000 others. Yeah. I mean, after that Marseille penalty, I would never have let him take it in a month of Sundays.
Absolutely.
It was a shame Arteta wasn't on the pitch, because he would have scored. And I think if we'd have scored that penalty, it would have been a totally different game.
Mm.
You could see our heads just went down the minute that penalty went in. They rose their game. It gave them confidence. They just thought, oh, luck's on our side, let's go, let's make sure that doesn't happen again. Our heads went down, Ozil's head went down, and from then on, the rest is history.
But if we'd have made it to half-time, which we actually almost did because they missed their penalty, and if it wasn't for that silly red card, obviously, with 11 men, I think we would have at least got a draw out of it.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think
that was ever a sending off either with Chesney. I mean, the people say definite sending off. I don't agree.
Mm.
He didn't deliberately bring the guy down.
No.
It wasn't a goal scoring opportunity. It wasn't. There was no malice in that tackle whatsoever. He was going for the ball, took his eye off it. He hit Robin by mistake. It was a penalty, maybe a booking, but a sending off, no way. And it ruined the game.
Mm.
Ruined the game.
What are you thinking, Raymond? If this, that, and the other, would it have gone another way?
I think for the first 30 or 40 minutes, we more than matched them, but we'll never know. That's football. We had a player sent off and the whole thing changed, and we'll never know whether we might have scraped a narrow home win or got a draw out of it or kept them from scoring. We'll just never know.
I do think that free kick right at the end, and we went to score a goal, when really, if we'd have just kept possession, which we weren't doing at all, we weren't managing to get hold of it, let alone keep possession, but if we'd have just kept a couple of minutes of possession, instead of just hoofing it up there and then all having a run back, you have to ask
if
whether 1-0 would have been
if we'd have finished at 1-0, I think we'd have had a chance.
I agree. I'll give Wenger his due, actually. I mean, people are very, very critical of him for whatever reason, but as soon as we got that free kick, I remember him standing on the edge of the box with his hands going up and down to say, calm down. Of course, Florence Koscielny seems to think, bless him, I'm going to score a winner on my own.
Yeah.
And he was about 5 yards further forward than any other Arsenal player. Unfortunately, Neuer is the best goalkeeper in the world. Grabbed the ball out of there and checkmate in about 2 minutes. But,
yeah.
I mean, looking at the team, though, Basti. Yaya Sanogo, I have jokingly called for his survival, to prove that he's alive for the last 5 months, because he's gone missing. And out of nowhere, he starts in an FA Cup game against Liverpool, which is one thing. FA Cup, we play our reserves. 3 days later, we play against the best team in the world, probably, at home, and you decide to drop the French international striker, who's been your only centre-forward for the entire season, and keep that unknown 19-year-old. Was Wenger right to drop Olivier Giroud for the first leg?
Well, the break seems to have done him good, because he's turned up and popped in a couple of rather good goals.
Mm.
I think, obviously, Wenger's super sensitive with all his players, and if a player goes through something, including front page headlines of Irish tabloids or whatever, and what allegedly happened, then he's going to say, look, take a couple of days off and put your feet up and come back refreshed, which he's done, and he's come back. Hopefully the same will happen to Ozil, although, albeit breaking news of whatever has happened there.
But hopefully
sometimes players need a little rest. I think certainly in the case of Ozil, he's I can't say he's used to a winter break all the time because he's playing in Madrid, but
yeah.
But
there was a winter break in Spain as well as Germany, I think.
Is there?
I think so.
Well, in that case, maybe there's just a point where the legs get tired. And also, don't forget, players who are used to a pace, like, you know, when Dennis came, when Henri came, you know, there was a point where they break into their stride into the Premiership and the kind of the, you know, raucous physical pace of it. Mm. And maybe Ozil, you know, after a bright start, his form's dips, maybe just needs a little break, come back. He's a class player, he's a good player, there's no question about that, and that he's not pulling his weight. And people say he looks lazy and stuff, but I looked at the stats of one of his games recently, and he ran more miles than any other player on the pitch.
That was a Munich game. By Munich game.
Yeah, that was a Munich game. So, you know, maybe he's one of those players that looks like he's not doing much, but probably is. So, you know, Gilberto was like that. We've always had, look, the players, they seem to disappear, but then when they're gone, it's like, oh my God, where have they gone, you know? So
the thing is, I mean, you mentioned it would have been, it's nice in the sense that he was given a rest for for a couple of days, but let's face it, he was on the bench for both games, so I mean there's a rest. So I mean, Steve, the player had female company in his hotel room at 3 o'clock on the day Arsenal defeated Crystal Palace. As far as Wenger's concerned, does carnal activity before a game affect your ability to score outside of a Docklands hotel?
Oh my God, what a good question. I don't think it does, to be honest, but it was 3 a.m.
yes.
I don't think shagging before a match would affect anyone's performance. There was a big thing about that in the 70s and 80s. You know, they used to keep players away from their wives and girlfriends before a match.
Well, I read in Arsenal, The Making of a Modern Super Club by Alex Finn and Kevin Witcher, that pornography was actually banned in hotel rooms for about 3 or 4
years. Yeah, I saw that. I don't see why that is. But 3 o'clock in the morning and, you know, this kind of all-night romp kind of situation... But obviously he's awake when he should be sleeping. We all know that when you don't go to bed till 3 or 4 in the morning, you're going to feel it the next day. So that's wrong, you know. And obviously having the woman in the room is wrong as well. Whether I blame him or not, I'm not sure.
The woman wasn't his wife, though, don't forget.
No,
that.
Exactly.
But, well, what are you thinking, Raymond? I mean, do you think you should go to bed at 10 o'clock with your headphones in, you know, not listening to anything? Or if one of the cast of Geordie Shore happened to turn up and, you know, fancy an arm wrestle, what do you do as a professional footballer?
Well, as a happily married man myself, I would say that if it's your wife who's in the hotel room with you at 3 o'clock in the morning, there isn't a story. And again, if you're not married, then there is someone in the hotel room with you.
Sleeping, aren't you? Yeah. If it's not your wife, then you're going to be up. Then you're going to be up till 3 a.m.
I think the main human interest side of things is that it wasn't his wife, and he's married, and a lot of people, especially in the French press, know his wife. And I think that was more of the angle than the fact that he had a lingerie model in there. If there wasn't, then, you know, he's a professional footballer, and they attract lingerie models. I wouldn't think there'd be a particular story. I think it was the fact that he's married that was the angle that I looked at it from.
Well, I think also
not the fact that he was. Kind of like doing something he shouldn't have been at 3 a.m. the night before a match, which could have affected his performance.
Yeah, but listen, a lot of players can't sleep sometimes. You know, sometimes you can't. Yeah. You've got a big match the next day. Well, not that Palace is a big match, but, you know, there are various reasons why people suffer insomnia. If it happens to be for a carnal reason, but I mean...
But they're in that hotel. They're in that hotel so that they can get a good night's rest before the game. Mm. If one of the players is up at 3 a.m. with a model... doing things he shouldn't be doing, then I think he should be rested or fined or whatever.
Here's the thing. I don't think it's so much that. It's that the emotional unrest within his domestic situation. Mm. That if you've got a player who his wife is, you know, not happy, and the domestic he's not going to feel good. He's going to be walking around with a cloud over his head because he loves his wife, obviously, and he's done it being a silly boy and he's gone and whatever.
Yeah.
But now he's going, oh shit, you know, what have I done? And now he's going to feel bad. But I do feel that Giroud is also, he was off the boil a bit anyway, and I think there was a point where something, it's probably right just to give him a rest anyway, just to let him rev up his engines again and go, I want to be on that pitch. Because he'd kind of gone off the boil, I think.
Let's not forget that Sonogo played really well against Liverpool in the FA Cup.
Mm. We'll come back to Sonogo in a minute, but I mean, just thinking about it, I mean, there were those allegations across a selection of tabloids with regards to Arsene Wenger, not just commentating on French football when he was going over to Palace twice a week. So maybe he's being a bit of a hypocrite. But having used the word hypocrite, after the Napoli 2-0 win, Jack Wilshere goes clubbing in the West End and gets caught smoking outside. rather than being dropped or smacked or anything like that, Wenger has a little chat with him. Are there double standards in the club? Some people can get away with murders, some can't.
No, I don't think so. I don't think Jack Wilshere got away with that. I mean, he got slammed by the press, slammed by all and sundry for that cigarette. He was clubbing after a match. It wasn't the night before a game.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's the key difference, I think.
Yeah, it wasn't 3 in the morning. Lots of players smoke. I know Wenger doesn't like smoking. Lots of players do. But the difference between that Wilshere incident and the Giroud incident is miles apart.
Well, also, I mean, to either incident, to be honest with you, Tony Adams and Ray Parlour and Paul Mercer will be just laughing at that. I mean, imagine writing a book about how I had a cigarette outside the thing and, a one-off bit of sex with someone. Yeah. Ooh, that's exciting. I'm reading Paul Merson's book at How Not to Be a Footballer at the moment.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's just, you can't really, it's not like they're in the depths of deep addiction there, is it? I mean, I don't know. I mean, hopefully Jack's not sort of too much of a wild child. And I mean, I think he was with his girlfriend and he was having a fag. I mean,
no, his girlfriend was at home looking after their two children.
Oh, so who was it he was with then?
Some token bird in the West End. Yeah, believe it or not, they do exist.
Apparently, she just came up to him when he was outside having the cigarette.
Oh, right.
Whether you believe that or not.
Well, of course.
Sure.
Well, I can believe that. Of course, it's Jack Wilshere at a club. So, look, it's Jack Wilshere. Let's go and chat him up. I mean, what would you do if you were a bird at a club?
Oh, that's a great question.
And by the way, what was that girl doing at a hotel room at 3 a.m? What, was she not set up by the Irish Sun to go there? Because it was the next day, it was in the Irish Sun. Front page before anything else. And what did she knock on the door and did she maybe say something like, oh, no one will know? And what's she doing there? What did he go out and get her or did she just turn up?
It was in the Docklands. My understanding is she is an accounts executive for JP Morgan and she was working late.
So, well, exactly. And what were they doing staying in a hotel room in bloody London? Anyway, we're playing Palace.
Mind you. You
get
can
a
bet
bus.
Your life.
Just stay at home you and get a bus.
You can bet your life. He's told his missus she might have been in the room at 3 a.m, but nothing happened.
There's no video.
Maybe nothing
story.
Did happen.
Yeah.
Maybe she was feeling lonely and she needed some counselling, and he was just being a nice guy.
Maybe
they had a cup of tea out one of those little hotel kettles.
Maybe he tried to finish over and over again, but instead just held her up and tried to play other people in. Or...
Over and over and over again.
Thank you very much.
That's never been one of my favourites.
Anyhow, he was replaced for 2 games by Yaya Sanogo, and we've finally seen him. What were your first impressions, Raymond?
Why aren't I seeing Bentner or Podolski was my first impression.
Oh, fair point.
I'm a bit harsh.
I think for those two big games, I think if the guy comes on in a league game when you're 2 or 3-0 up with 15, 20 minutes to go, then that's exactly the time that you need to be seeing him for the first couple of times. But to start him in those two massive games was just very, very surprising. I mean, if we hadn't won the Liverpool game, I would have been surprised if he'd started the Munich game. I think the pressure on the manager would have been a bit too much. He did okay in the Liverpool game. He lasted for about 85 minutes, which was pretty good, depending on his, seeing as he hadn't played all season.
Mm-hmm.
And the manager almost seemed reluctant to bring Giroud on. But against Munich, I think he was out of his depth. But I don't think you can blame the kid for that. Mm-hmm. He's just a youngster.
And with 10 men.
Yeah,
well.
Exactly. The manager should have played a more experienced centre forward against Bayern Munich.
Here.
Steve, I don't know about you, but I'm convinced he could be the new Adebayor. The first thing you hear about him is that apparently he turned around and hit our 6'8" real captain, Mertesacker, to give him a black eye. So I'm a little bit worried he could be the new Adebayor.
You're talking to one of Adebayor's greatest fans here.
I should have given this to Bastia, right?
I know he plays for Spurs, and I know he left us in the lurch, and I know he went to Real Madrid.
You can't
City,
score against Norwich.
And I know he did the knee celebration, but I think that's all down to Arsene Wenger. Arsene Wenger should have nourished and cherished Adebayor when he was at the club.
Mm.
And he should still be our striker now. We've never had a striker as good as him since.
No.
Giroud is not fit to
lick. Why should you nourish and cherish a player Giroud. Who scores a goal and then goes, oh, I've done my job.
Giroud
now.
Is not fit to lick. It's Adebayor's boots, I don't think, as far as skill and talent is concerned. And Adebayor's got a work rate if you treat him right.
Yeah. If you play him right.
Yeah, if you play him right. What was the question again?
Like me, are you worried/delighted that he could be the new Adebayor?
Right, okay. So he's not going to be the new Adebayor. He hasn't got Adebayor's touch. He's a good player, works hard, he's tall, he's a bit of a totem pole.
Yeah.
Good player, I don't dislike him. But he's never going to be the new Adebayor.
I think he's got a better touch than Anelka.
Anelka was sleek, slick. He glided past defences. I can't see Sanago doing that.
Did you see Adebayor's touch against Norwich for Tottenham yesterday?
Was it like Brian Talbot? He controlled the ball further than most people can pass it.
It wasn't that great.
Yeah, look at the goals he scored this year, though. He's their top scorer.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm sorry. I don't, if Adebayor was that great, he'd be playing for the Arsenal. He's obviously not that good, is he?
I mean, it's a bit like the Van Persie.
He's got an ego, and like Anelka, he's got an ego that's better than his football.
Look at Arshavin, look at Podolski, look at Adebayor. All good players, all gone by the wayside because of one man, Arsene Wenger.
Yeah, but you just,
he cannot just nurture talent.
You're just an anti-Wengerite, aren't you? Look, you see, he can't. We're 1 point off the top of the league, right, with 11 games to go, Steve. What do you fucking want?
Well, I want Arsene Wenger.
Big 6 points, clear would be nice.
I want Arsene Wenger now to maximise his resources, which he should have done in January. And I want him to play Podolski because he's the best striker.
I agree with Podolski.
Got.
Should be played a bit more.
Why is Podolski not playing more? I think he's outrageous.
I think he should be coming on every game, right, in the last 20 minutes, half an hour. Because when he starts, he doesn't seem, for some reason, Podolski doesn't seem to fulfil his potential. But bring him on with half an hour to go, he'll pop one in for you.
Yeah.
Right, because he's sitting there on the bench going, like being wound up like one of those little
cars. Games to goals ratio, there's no one better than him at the club. Games to goals. What's he got? 5-6 starts and 5 goals.
He's probably the best finisher we've got at the club.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he normally finishes well when he comes on.
Would you be surprised if Wenger sells Podolski in the summer?
No, I wouldn't be surprised at all. There's an awful lot of rumours that Galatasaray were in for him. Wenger was happy to let him go, but Podolski didn't want to.
Well, that speaks volumes for the manager to me. Why can't you incorporate a great player like Podolski into the team?
Personally, I think it's because he's a little bit redundant. He's kind of like an old-fashioned number nine, like Fernando Torres. And the way that we play, the lone centre-forward, you know, you have to play like Giroud with your back to goal.
Yeah, you say that. When it was 1-1 against West Ham and he put in a cross for one goal and scored another, what's redundant about that?
Yeah.
I don't see anything. I think what we need is a number nine who's going to go, right, stop this, back of the net.
And when you look at Ozil's recent form, is Wenger... You know, is Ozil going down the same route as all those previous players, whereby great player when we signed him, not so good when we sold him?
It could be the curse of the number nine.
The curse of Arsene Wenger.
The curse of the number nine.
Podolski's hoping the manager doesn't sign a new contract, I reckon.
You reckon? Well,
Podolski can outlast the manager, that's what he's hoping.
Do you think?
Go on, Lucas.
I think that's true.
What's the Lucas Podolski song again? His first
Podolski. I can't remember.
His second name's Podolski.
Something like that.
And that is why
we love him.
But we love him because he's called Podolski. Would we not love him if he was called Smith?
Oh, he reminds me of he's like a German Paul Merson.
Yeah.
There's something about him that he's got a good, he sort of fits in with the fans. He's got a kind of down to earthness.
Totally.
He's a laugh in the, he's good for the dressing.
Well, if you remember, Arshavin was a bit like that as well.
Not
when
really.
He started.
No, Arshavin was
when
really,
he started.
No, but Arshavin had the sense of humour of a, like, you know.
No, when he started,
Soviet
it was like, I am Gunnar. And he was really up
there. His website was an awful lot of fun. He used to invite questions from fans. He gave very, very literal, very, very blank answers. They were quite funny.
Don't forget, Wenger was the man that left Arshavin out in the 2009 semi-final against the evil Chelsea, which we lost. Every fan in that stadium wanted Arshavin to start.
Mm.
The only person that didn't want him to start was Wenger for some strange reason.
Yeah, but I think Arshavin had something mentally... He wasn't relaxed enough. There was something in there holding him back, and I don't know what it was. And he had these moments of brilliance, right? But consistently, someone like Podolski just seems more relaxed, more kind of comfortable in his own skin as a person. I think ultimately, you know, you've got 11 footballers out there, and this is where Ozil is at the moment. He doesn't look comfortable in his own skin. We need to have players who are out there brimming with confidence, who are up for the, you know, winning games.
We need Jurgen Klopp. That's what we need.
Well, you know, it's 21st century. We're near Dalston. You need a really good beard at your club. That's my understanding. You've mentioned Mesut Ozil a few times. Raymond, his performance against Bayern was so poor, let's face it. He didn't have a make-believe dead leg. He was dropped for the game against Sunderland. Do you think we look like a better team without our £42.5 million man?
I think that's an easy accusation to make. I think he's a really, really good player. And he's horribly out of form. So I can see the parallels with Ramsey a year or two ago. And I think he'll be back, and he'll be back better, and he'll come back rested. He's been overplayed since he signed, without a doubt. So he definitely needed a rest, and it took a really poor performance and a lot of focus on that for him to get the rest. So maybe there's a silver lining from all of that, and he'll come back a better player. But I think
if you're going to pick your best Arsenal team, Ozil is definitely in it for me.
Shouldn't Wenger have realised that Ozil was being overplayed and rested him before now?
Yeah.
Agreed, but you're just on an anti-Wenger rant tonight, so I'm going to ignore that.
No, not just tonight.
No, but the anti-Wenger rant aside, he ought to have been dropped maybe for one or two of the lighter games beforehand, so that, you know, well, there weren't that... well, what, we had Palace, didn't we, before that? Was that before?
Yeah, but the thing is, we haven't really won a game easily, apart from against Sunderland. We haven't been 3-0 up at half-time, or 3-1 up with 15 minutes to go, or 4-0 up, where you could take off some of those players who've been overplayed. So, almost by necessity, with a really poor record of scoring goals in the first half that we've had in the league recently, you haven't been able to make changes early, and it's been the standard 70th minute substitution, taking off a winger, and
but that's all he ever does.
He hasn't really ever going to be been able to change from that. Mm. So, the irony is, if Ozil had played on Saturday and we'd have been 3-0 up at half-time, you'd have been looking for him to come off after 60 minutes, but it was actually the other way around. But I think he'll be back, and he'll be back better.
Well, let's face it, Sunderland are in the relegation place at the moment. They can't have been that good. I mean, people are very, very critical of Ozil at the moment. There's a theory amongst some people, Basti, that Ozil was a panic buy in the summer, and Arsenal are now kind of backtracking, as it were, and this is behind the booking. The dropping rather than booking.
No. I just think Ozil needs a break. I agree with Raymond. I just think he's played every game, and he's used to a winter break, and a little break, and like with Giroud as well. I think often, you know, players who are running their pants off and working hard, and I do think he's working hard, as mentioned before. You know, he does run the mileage, and he does a lot of unseen work, and I think he could be a bit homesick, he could be all sorts of stuff coming in, and he just needs to settle down, and maybe he just needs a little break. He'll come back, and I think he'll come good, because he is a class act. And I think in the summer also, you know, if we do bolster the side up with a couple of world class players, then, you know, sky's the limit.
So we can just ease him back
don't
in for a nice easy Stoke away.
Yes. Don't bank on that, Basti. Wenger has signed two players in the last three or four transfer windows, two of them on the last day of the window.
Yeah,
why is it going to be any different this year?
He's not a big buyer, is he?
Why
because
is the summer
Usmanov
be
and Usmanov and David Dean are going to come into the boardroom, and they're going to start.
Why is
Dino's
it?
Going to go you flying know. Around the world Wenger, buying players.
Wenger will go to QPR. He'll say, "How much do you want for Loic Remy?"
Please.
QPR will say 15 million. Wenger will say, "I'll give you 8."
Please, can we not talk about the transfer window in the middle of February?
Yeah,
that's
bad enough over the summer. We're
yeah,
1 point
yeah,
off
have
the
we
top
got next,
and
anyway.
Into the cup quarter
final. Stoke
final.
Away.
Well, look, I mean, let's look at the results since our last podcast. We've had 5 league games, and I've got a relatively disappointing record. We've played 5, won 2, drawn 2, lost 1. Taking only 8 points from those 15 available, including in those with 2 matches in the space of 5 days, where we lose 5-1 at Anfield and then drew 0-0 at home to the worst Manchester United team since about 1990. Basti, are they likely to do any better than when we faced Chelsea and Man City at the end of March?
Well, look, if you look at those 5 games, is Chelsea 0-0 in there as well?
Man United 0-0, Liverpool 5-1, Southampton 2 each, Crystal Palace 2-0 and Sunderland 4-1.
Yeah, Southampton's a disappointment, because that's, you know, that's a game we want to be winning.
And we didn't turn up in the first half.
No, well, that's something we've not been doing. I mean, obviously Liverpool was just...
A beating.
It was Annus Horribilis in 20 minutes.
We never turned up in the first half, though, do we, really, under Wenger? No. Saturday was a bit of an exception.
Well, we've had to learn to do
under Wenger, I think, in the previous things, yeah. The best teams that we have, the best teams that every team has,
yeah.
is capable of winning a lot of league games before half-time.
Yeah.
At the moment, we're not quite there with this team.
Listen, if we come out like we did against Bayern Munich, what we need to do is come out like we're playing against Bayern Munich every week,
yeah.
right? And without, obviously, trying to give away penalties and get sent off. Mm. But ultimately, you know, I think sometimes we, as my Brazilian girlfriend often says, they walk out with their stilettos on, you know. And if you wear high heels on a grass football pitch, you're going to get stuck. And they do. They walk up and down. Sometimes they walk up. I mean, I saw little signs of it even against Sunderland.
Mm.
There they are. I thought, hello. They were 3-0 up at the time. But I thought, oh, here we go. They got the high heels out the second half. They're walking around. And suddenly Sunderland were attacking. And we do have that tendency.
Look at the goal difference. Look, we could have beaten Sunderland 7-1 or 7-0 on Saturday. Once we got to 4, we stopped.
We stopped. Well, at least we got to 4. And I was saying to Terry and Ian when I was watching, I was saying... you know, can we now, we scored the first goal, and everyone, the first thing everyone says, look, can we now go 3-0 up? I actually exactly said 3-0 up at half time. Hallelujah, we actually scored three goals before half time. Because normally we'd be 1-0 up until 90 minutes to, you know, 90 odd minutes.
Only an Arsenal fan could complain about winning a league match for only 4-1.
I know.
But you know what? The previous six league games, we hadn't scored in the first half at the Emirates.
Absolutely.
Now, for a team going for the title, I think that's a pretty terrible statistic. I think
Although we did win the majority of those games, we did. You know, he's played over 90 plus minutes.
The thing is, we can beat bad teams and we can beat mediocre teams. And when we play City and Chelsea and even Man United, we can't beat them.
No.
I mean, so far this season, that's what's happened.
Well, that has not changed from previous seasons, has it? We've got Spurs away.
To bad teams then as
we've
well.
Got Spurs away coming up, Chelsea away coming up, Man City at home coming up. Now, if we're going to win the title, we need to win two of those games, I think.
Well, it's Spurs and Man City, I reckon. Oh, it's Spurs and Chelsea, actually.
Well, we need
Chelsea. Let's do Chelsea at the Bridge. We owe Mourinho one, don't we? Because, you know, I love the way he goes on about all that failure stuff. And then, what was the game he lost immediately afterwards?
A cup game against Man City.
So failure up yours, Mourinho.
I know this is a question that David should possibly be asking, but I'm going to assume the mantle of chairperson at the moment. If we do not beat Chelsea, City or Spurs in these crucial games coming up, and let's imagine we lose at home to Everton in the FA Cup, or even beat Everton and then lose the semi-final, we're assuming we're going to lose to Munich as well. Do you want Wenger to sign a new contract?
Well, there's a big word. I don't know the future. That's why I'm a football fan. I'm going out there for the next game, which is Stoke away.
Is it going to be 10 years and counting? 11 years.
Kenny Dalglish famously said, "The only match that matters is the next one."
But we've been on.
He obviously didn't say we beat them 2-0.
We've been on this route for the last 7 or 8 seasons. Every season is the same.
This is a very different season, Steve.
We beat the easy teams, we lose to the good teams.
Yeah, no, but we used to draw or lose. The games we used to draw or lose, we are now winning or very worst drawing.
Yeah, okay.
And so we have gone up a gear. There's no question. I've got to say, Mesut Ozil has unseen.
We're bigger flat-track bullies than we used to be.
Yeah, that's it.
Nothing wrong with being a flat-track bully. You get 3 points against every team.
Yeah, I quite like that.
But
wasn't it Tony Adams saying if you do that, then you can
win? I think if Wenger cannot take us up to the level where we can at least get a point against Chelsea away and beat Manchester City and occasionally beat Manchester United, I think we should get a new manager.
We can beat Chelsea away.
Well, I mean,
you're right.
You mentioned Wenger getting a new agreement, but I mean, he obviously hasn't signed one, even though Gazidis came out the day after and when Wenger said, "I don't want to talk about it," Gazidis says, "No, he will be remaining." I mean, do we actually think he might be going at the end of the season and simply doesn't want to announce it before the campaign is done and dusted? Raymond, your initial thought?
I have no idea. I'm more interested in what happens on the pitch at the moment. I think all that stuff at the end of the season, all this manager stuff, it's just back page headlines. Put the ball in the net, win some points, win some trophies. That's my focus at the moment.
And my message to Steve is, whoa, awesome Wenger's magic. He wears a magic hat. And when he saw the football league, he says, "I'm having that." Whoa!
Yeah,
10 years ago.
I think that's the last time I heard that. Oh, well, look, going back to the pitch, we are going to play Everton in the FA Cup quarter-final. 3 days...
The FA Cup quarter-final?
That's a Freudian slip, unfortunately. Let's start again. We're going to be playing Everton in the FA Cup quarter-final 3 days before the second leg in Munich. Basti, in which game should Wenger play his strongest team? But in which game is he going to play his strongest team?
What, Munich or the FA Cup?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
What should he do and what will he do?
Oh, God. Oh, ask Steve this one. I don't want to ask.
He should play his strongest team against Everton. It's obvious.
Okay.
We're not going to win the Champions League.
Okay.
If we beat, you know, Munich away, it'll be 3-2 or, you know, 1-0. It'll be a gallant win like last year. And we'll go out again in the last 16 for the 4th, 5th, 6th consecutive season because we never win the group stage. And we leave ourselves open to getting Real Madrid and Barcelona and Bayern Munich and AC Milan. If Wenger learnt to win the bloody group stage, we wouldn't be in this position.
I've lulled anyway, you into having a false said that, sense of security.
Having said that, after 16 years, he still hasn't learnt to win the group stage, but that's another argument. But having said that, we're going out against Munich, whatever happens. So play your strongest team against Everton. We've still got a chance of winning the cup, although my belief that we can beat Man City in any shape or form is pretty
Listen,
slim.
Steve, yeah. if one team can... I've lulled you into a false sense of security, right?
Yeah.
Because if one team can beat Bayern Munich 2-0, right, at the Allianz Arena, it's Arsenal, right? Okay, they've proven they can do that already.
Did that once, yeah.
Right? We've done it against Liverpool when Michael Thomas had his moment. George said, you know, it was never in any doubt as people to Peter Allwood. Right, now, if there's one team that can come out with a bit of magic and do this sort of thing, it's Arsenal. And this is the best Arsenal we've seen since 2005, probably, right?
Yeah, I'll give you that.
So you've got to be optimistic. You've got to say, look, we can have a go at this and play your best team. Why can't we win the Champions League and FA Cup and league treble?
Well, last Wednesday night at 7:15, I would have said, yes, we can. Well, we proved against Bayern Munich.
But it's only one game, it's 90 minutes.
But they used the second half as a training session.
Yeah, but they're going to be going back there again, going, they're going to be going back there again, going, oh, well, they did it last time. But really, they're thinking, well, we've won this. Right, all we've got to do is score a goal there.
Scored in the first minute last year, we won't do that again.
Well, you don't know. You don't know. You don't know what's going to happen. And I would always say, for any competition, right, play your strongest team that you have available, that's fit, for that 90 minutes. You can always take a player off if you're 3-0 up, right?
But
if you're playing a weakened team because you want to win in another competition, that's a loser mentality.
Would you play your strongest team against Everton in the Cup?
Yes, of course.
That's it then, that's the answer.
Mr Hurley, if I gave you Sophie's choice, what would you go for?
I would go for both. Why not?
Absolutely.
Playing in Everton, we want to stay in the Cup, we want to get to Wembley. And then you want to get a good result in Munich. We saw last year what a good result out there did for the rest of the season. Yeah, we went out, but you know, if we went out there with a shadow team and we lost 3-0, you know, that could really affect the rest of the season. So let's do it both. It's the business end of the season. Big players got to be playing every week. They've got to be playing 90 minutes. Let's do it in both games, is what I say.
Would you play the same team in both games, though?
I would play the strongest team, yeah, absolutely.
Strongest
I think
both
so.
Games.
Maybe one or two different, maybe not quite as attacking, you know, in Munich or something like that, just to see, you know, see how the first half goes. But I would, you know, I would play what you would expect, certainly down the spine, down the middle of the team. Obviously, Szczesny can't play out there, but other than that, I would get the first choice 11 available on the pitch.
Well, you've got to go out to win a match, haven't you? And also, if you go out to Bayern Munich, and say we go out there and get a 2-2 draw or beat them 2-1, right, as you said, you know, that's a springboard for the rest of the season. We come back here, we're the team that beat Bayern Munich, or we didn't lose. You know, what that does mentally to the players when they're out there playing Chelsea and Man City or whoever, right, they're going to say, well, look, we beat Bayern Munich. It sends a message out.
I get that, and it worked last year.
Going out and losing 3-0.
It worked last year brilliantly.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's what he's got to go for.
But if it happens again this year, it's just Groundhog Day yet again, isn't it? Glorious failure. As Stephen Howard said in The Sun last week, Arsenal are the specialists in failure. No one does failure quite as gloriously as Arsenal.
All right, but where were we that when we got knocked out by Munich last season, right? Yeah. Where were we in the league? How many points off the top position? And where did we end up at the end? How many points up
did we
catch up? We
ended up fourth last year.
Yeah, but we caught up, didn't we?
We did.
Do the same as we did last year, we'll win the league.
But don't bet against us finishing fourth again this year.
Well, staying on the pitch for the time being, this is juicy.
On that bombshell.
Absolutely. WWITN News at Laguna Podcast. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, he seems to have recovered well from his injury. He's you know, a lot stronger than he was beforehand anyway. The big question now, Raymond, is his best position out wide as the token Theo Walcott replacement or playing in the centre of the park?
Right now, I think we need him on the wing. Put some pace in the team. I think we really miss Walcott. For all his faults, I think without him there ain't much pace in the team. So if you've got the Ox with as much pace as he's got, I don't think we can afford to put him in the middle at the moment. And we've got quite a few central midfielders. We haven't got many fast wingers. So while Walcott is out for the rest of the season, I think you've got to stick him on the wing, play him high up the pitch, get him on the touchline, because without him we really struggle to stretch teams.
It's a fair point. Having said that, I'm one of the only Arsenal fans who absolutely hates Mikel Arteta and can't see the point in him. Who would I rather have in the centre midfield, choosing between Arteta or Oxlade-Chamberlain, who did quite well against AC Milan in the Champions League a couple of years ago? Basti, where would you play Oxlade-Chamberlain?
Well, not where Arteta plays. I mean, Arteta's playing at the sort of back of midfield.
He's one of the two, isn't he?
But I don't actually, I'll be honest with you, I think Arteta's, you know, been an all-right player, but I don't see him as the future. And
he's more than an all-right player.
But he'd be one that I would like to see replaced in the summer, to be honest with you, with what I would consider a world-class player, someone who does get picked.
You wouldn't sell him though, would you?
Yeah, of course. I wouldn't sell him. No, I want to sell him and replace him with a world class player. Or you could put him on, have him as a,
I'd have
a
him
bench
as a squad
guy.
Player.
Okay, you can have him as a squad player.
Back to the transfer window again.
But yeah, sorry. But as for Oxlade-Chamberlain, I think that depends on Wenger's got to decide. What, once again, he can play both, so be tactical. Think about it. Maybe give him a bit of freedom. I don't know. You know, I'm not a football manager, but I know that he can run and he can score goals and he can take players on as well. And he runs at players, which is nice. Sometimes too much when he should be passing. He runs at players and runs into a cul-de-sac. But that's youth. You know, he's young and he's got to learn that. But he's certainly refreshing. And when he comes on, you know, he asks questions of the defence, which is. So yeah, just yeah, play him for sure. You know, he seems to be full of it at the moment. So certainly in Walcott's absence, and Sanya on his own there on the right needs someone else a little bit to help him with getting the ball across.
I've been changing on the right all day long because I think we should assign someone to replace Walcott in January. We should assign a pacey right winger to replace him.
Thomas Ince.
Well, he was free, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And that's about Wenger's.
So mark. Good, he went to Palace.
Yeah. But no, play Chamberlain there. He's the only one that can do it. Or Gnabry. Play either of those there because we need that pace.
Well, another guy who's been filling in on the right wing, even though he's been doing better in the middle this season, is Aaron Ramsey. I mean, do we think he's actually going to return from his injury in time to help Arsenal's title push, or have we lost face in the club's medical team where he's going to be back next week? And let's face it, it's August if we're lucky.
Well, 3 weeks is always 3 months, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Wengeritis, as it were.
Diaby winning this current injury, how long is it now? 18 months?
Oh, I'm not sure.
And that was supposed to be like 3 months, wasn't it?
I think it was he went off in the early stage of a Champions League game last year, and we've not seen him since.
And apparently, this Gundogan that we're supposed to be interested in at Dortmund,
Ilkay Gundogan.
That's it. Yeah. Great player, fantastic player. Apparently, he's got an injury record the same as Diaby's. So don't bet against Arsenal signing him in the summer.
I think there's one little point is with a player like Giroud up front on his own, you've got to have either Oxlade-Chamberlain or Podolski, like very attacking midfielders who can score goals and who aren't scared to run up and overtake Podolski, Giroud, because Giroud holds the ball up, Alan Smith a lot, you know, holds it up, he can lay it off, he can. A lot of the stuff he does is making goals as well as scoring them. So I think it's important that there's more overlapping happening, because often we're parked outside the area and it doesn't look like someone's making a piercing run. So in that sense, yes. Mm. And also Ramsey was doing that as well when if he can come back and have an outro like he had an intro to the season, then we're laughing. God.
Expectations will be
scoring a winner against City in the semi-final.
Oh.
Brilliant. Mind you though, you know what we're going to get? Knowing us, we'll beat City in the semi-final. We'll get someone just like Birmingham in the final and blow it again.
Oh, at that point Chesney and Koscielny go into each other's heads and feet.
Can you believe that?
Sadly, I can't.
We're a better team now. We're more gelled, we're more mature. We've got a little more than we had back then. And I think if we can get to the final and
Arsenal home City, imagine that.
Well, we got to be. I tell you what though, Everton is not a water. You know,
no,
to be honest with you, I'm more worried about Everton than whoever we were to maybe get in the final.
Absolutely, Steve. How negative would you be tonight if we were already out of all the cups and we were down in fifth?
I'm not negative at all. I'm really positive. I just think we could do better if Arsene Wenger wasn't our manager.
And who said red wine isn't a depressant?
I'm the most positive fan going. I love watching Arsenal. I love the team. I love seeing them win all the time. I just don't think Wenger, wants to win things.
Well, that's because
money.
David Seaman's no Wenger longer wants in the team. Because when it was David Seaman, Wenger was
all right. Wenger and Kroenke want to make money for the club.
Yes.
They want the club to be the richest club in the world with no trophies.
Yeah.
I want the club to be the best club in the world with trophies. And at the moment, Wenger and Kroenke are making us play and try and win trophies with one hand behind our back. And I'll always criticise Wenger and Kroenke until that situation changes.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I much prefer to see David Dean back in the steering seat.
Yeah. I mean, I think if Wenger and Kroenke gave us the best chance to win trophies by spending the resources, you know, by looking at the managerial options maybe, you know, by trying to compete with Bayern Munich and Real Madrid and Chelsea and Man City, absolutely brilliant. But I don't think we're trying to compete, we're just trying to make money.
That's the whole Gazidis Kroenke ethic, isn't it? I mean, obviously that they're seeing it as a business,
yeah,
as much as they are, or if not more, than a football club. As fans,
and Wenger is compliant.
That's not what we want to see.
Wenger is compliant with the company policy.
Well, he's doing the best he can with what he's given. But yeah,
yeah.
Well, no, I do agree with you. But let me turn that one around and say, just say on the off chance, right? It's not a million to one. It might be 5 to 1. Arsenal win the league this season, or yeah, win the FA Cup.
Yeah.
Would you eat your shirt and say, thank you, Monsieur Wenger?
There wouldn't be any shirt to eat.
Would you go and congratulate Mr. Wenger?
I would say, we won the league this year, we won the cup this year, despite the
No, you wouldn't. You'd be rolling
despite
on...
Despite Kroenke.
You'd be in some pub, rolling on your back on a pool table, going, come on, he's done us, wouldn't he?
Well, I won't be celebrating because of Wenger, it'd be despite of Wenger.
What, the manager who's just won the league?
Yeah, how many fans don't think like me? Every fan I speak to thinks like me. David does.
I do, actually. I personally do think Wenger's taken it as far as he can. However, if we somehow do the double this year, I'll happily stand corrected. And if he signed a 3-year extension, I wouldn't be too unhappy about it.
Okay, so you can eat Steve's shirt and he can eat yours. And we can do that live on this podcast.
Okay.
And you can shave your moustaches as well, just like that.
That could work, actually. No, we're running out of time, but moving off the pitch very, very quickly. Raymond, what do you fancy talking about? Puma or our complete fuck-up in the January transfer window? And who the hell is Kim Kallstrom?
Oh, well, I'm not a 12-year-old boy, so I couldn't care less about Puma. So, transfer window, again, back to what I said earlier. But it was mismanaged. I don't think anyone can deny that. You know, we knew what we needed. We didn't get it. We got ourselves another midfielder and an injured midfielder at that. So there's a lot of negatives there, but I'm trying to keep it tight and bright, seeing as I'm sitting next to the Highbury Spire and all he wants to do is moan, even though we're a point off the top and still in the FA Cup.
Yeah. We're going to finish fourth, though.
I think it's a shame. There was a chance there to really consolidate and spend some money, so I do see Steve's point on that. I think everybody sees that point, but this is what we've got now to the end of the season, so we've just got to get on with it, and we need some positive support for the team.
Will you forgive Arsene and Ivan and Dick Law if Kim Kallstrom does a Michael Thomas in the Norwich game at the end of the season, Basti?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's just such an unknown quantity. I mean, we might as well be talking about Paul Lyderson on a motorway.
I don't think Wenger took money himself to sign the player.
But I don't know. I mean, I'd rather talk about what's on the pitch as well. And I mean, you know, we've got a lot of strengths and a few weaknesses. I think, you know, one of weaknesses, if I look at someone like Santi Cazorla, I think sometimes he's very talented on the ball, he's got great touch, but he's very much one of these little Spanish players who sort of seems to run around in circles with himself, and I've got the ball, whoops, I haven't got the ball, rather than just put a simple pass.
Would you have taken him off last week against Munich when we went down to 10 men? Or would you have taken someone else off?
Well,
if some who?
Well, probably...
Well, Ozil, surely, with hindsight, but I think everybody would say
it's
that.
It's easy
but,
with hindsight
but,
to
you
say
know, Ozil was the big player, and I don't think really at that point nobody batted an eyelid when Cazorla went off, and it's only the next day when it became apparent what happened to Ozil's performance after missing the pen that people started to question the substitute. So I think it's just a bit of... after the horse is bolted, people are always more wise after the event. So.
Well, I'd have taken off Sonogo, who's just because he's complete. You know, he's a kid. He's not ready for that level.
Yeah.
And then you've got Bayern Munich with 10 men, and you expect Sonogo to do. So what's he going to do?
You could have played with the fake number 9, couldn't you?
Just bring on Podolski, then, and at least he's got experience.
Yeah.
And might just put in that ball or whatever, some little breakaway. Not that he's a great tackler back necessarily. In fact, it gives away penalties like. Yeah. Like Steve gives away.
Did it against Liverpool in the cup, didn't he?
Compliments to Wenger.
Yeah. Great analogy. I've got nothing against Arsene Wenger. I just think we could do better.
What then? What? Okay.
Klopp.
Where? Who?
Klopp.
Jens Klopp.
I mean, David alluded to it earlier. He's given up the title in Germany. He's realised Bayern Munich is so
beat
far
Dortmund. Ahead. Hamburg, who are bottom of the league, beat Dortmund.
Yeah.
After Klopp gave the league up.
How much is Klopp on? $5 million a year, $6 million a year, whatever. Wenger is arming and arming over signing a new contract worth $8 million a year. We could give half that to Klopp and he'd be earning more money than he is now.
Let's talk about it in the summer.
Absolutely.
I say Steve Ashford for Arsenal manager.
I think he's slightly underqualified.
Well, I would certainly give Podolski a few more starts.
Yeah, well, why not?
Right, I'm going to call our editor, Kevin Forward, as we've had an email in. That's right. Someone sent us an email regarding our last podcast. Kevin, I shall hand over to you.
Yes, in the last podcast, we had Matthew Bazell, author of Theatre of Silence, and we thought he'd be well informed to inform us about the Coventry fans protest. Well, we had an email from Vincent Cummins, and he writes, Coventry fans protested because they are playing their home games in Northampton. I cringed when I heard the podcast. Unless the podcasters research and have a knowledge of a topic, don't touch it. An apology wouldn't go amiss either. So just to explain, our guest panellist Matthew told us that the Coventry fans, when they came to Arsenal, were protesting about the club not getting income from ticket sales, as this money goes to shareholders. And in fact, this wasn't the case, but we thought he might know.
Are you sending him to Coventry?
Well, that's good, Basti. But the question was sprung on him, and we thought he was a relevant authority. But we assumed wrongly he would be familiar with what the Coventry fans' issues were. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case. So our apologies for his explanation not being accurate. We did actually ask him before the recording whether he knew about it, and he said he did. So he just got that one wrong.
What were they protesting about?
They're playing in Northampton, 35 miles away from Coventry.
At the risk of upsetting Coventry fans listening to the Goon podcast...
No, this was an Arsenal fan that wrote in.
Oh, it was, right.
Yeah,
he's
just saying we were misinformed.
Oh,
yeah,
right. I think it's only about Coventry, so...
There was quite a lot of focus on that. Red Action did actually talk quite closely to some Coventry fans just because they were trying to coordinate their protest at the televised TV cup game just to bring it some into the national press. And basically they are owned by a company called Sisu, who are... You know, basically asset stripping as much as they can and moving the team out of Coventry because they don't want to pay the rent on a 5 or 6 year old stadium, and making all those Coventry fans travel 35 miles down the road to Northampton. And basically the whole protest is about when Coventry are going to go and play in Coventry again.
Well, I think that rent is about £1 million a year, isn't it? Even for a first division team, surely they can afford that. I mean, I do feel for those Coventry fans terribly having to go all the way to Northampton. You know, and any team whose club is being asset stripped, I think it's awful, horrendous. Mm. So I have every sympathy for the Coventry fans.
Almost time to wrap up, unfortunately. But before we do, a few more words from Kevin about the current issue of the Gooner.
Yes, indeed. It's been on sale for a couple of games. It's still going to be on sale for the Everton FA Cup quarter-final. And our special feature this issue is called Moments of Endearment, where our contributors write about an incident which made a particular player appeal greatly to them. So, for example, I have written about Steve Williams facing the chicken run when they invaded the pitch at Upton Park and standing his ground. It was a great moment. There's also an interview with Kenny Sansom, a piece on the case for the return of terracing, article on Per Mertesacker's influence on the team, an explanation as to why certain fans do leave the game early, and we have someone asking, will social networking get rid of the need for ticket touts? So plenty of reading in there, much more, including a column by our friend across the table, the Highbury Spy, and plenty more of the usual favourites. So please help us continue by paying £2.50 for the issue if you're going to the Everton game.
And what? As a new regular feature, we've got a song at the end of each Gooner podcast, haven't we, Steve?
We have indeed.
We're going to do We Will Follow the Arsenal, aren't we?
Are we?
Yeah.
Are
we will follow the Arsenal under land and sea.
And Leicester!
We will follow the Arsenal onto victory. All together now.
Finally, the usual reminder that if you want to email us about anything related to the podcast, our address is goonerpodcast@gmail.com. And with that, it's goodbye from Steve.
Goodbye. And may I just say that the atmosphere against Liverpool in the FA Cup was the best atmosphere ever at the Emirates.
I'd like to thank Raymond for what he did at the Bayern Munich game.
Thank you. Thanks to everyone who got involved, including the guys from the Gooner who promoted it long and hard for us.
And Mustafa.
I would like to say I do not know who this Highbury spy is or what he does for a living, but the marriage is out of the question, and I hope you drop dead, Mr. Ashford.
Talk to me after the game.
Okay.
We'll be back at the end of March with another podcast. Until then, this is your host, David Udo, saying goodbye and thank you for listening.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company. Way!